Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men Podcast. We are here to talk about...
Drop? What? Did you hear just the big drop of something? What did you drop, Shai?
I was putting those headphones on.
Drop some headphones. It's fine. Yes. Let's kick things off with an in-joke that no one possibly would have heard. Right, I'm Paul Machin. I'm joined by Ross Chanley and Chris Pajak for the pod. We have got a kick-off question from... Right?
Yeah.
Why are you both looking at your watches?
Well, I got a phone call.
All right. So
I probably wanted to know the time.
I got a fax.
You got a smoke signal.
It's been a great start to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Kick-off question comes from Joe Clark. If you had to have one of Konchesky, Poulsen, Jovanovic or Balotelli in the current first team, who would it be, Chris? That's a real Sophie's choice of a question.
They've got to go in the 11. So where could they do the least damage? Next to Virgil van Dijk, Konchesky.
So left back... In a system that is fundamentally hinged on the success of our fullbacks, yes. You go and Paul Konchesky.
Absolutely. Because he's next to Virgil van Dijk, and that's all I need to know.
Yeah. Anything better than that?
Balotelli.
Why? He's fucking terrible.
Because he'd be far away from our fucking goal, so we won't concede seven again.
Yeah.
And also, at least you'd have some laughs along the way.
Do you remember us having Balotelli? Do you remember any laughs?
No.
They were all at City.
Yeah, exactly. All we had to do was it's all the things that he did. It's all the interesting, charismatic things that he did. They were all at Manchester City.
He was just a bore at Liverpool.
He was a fucking massive shit bore. I can agree on that. He didn't even celebrate his goals. What a dickhead. Like, I get like the, well, does a postman celebrate with Liverpool's post? No, but a postman doesn't have one of the greatest jobs on planet Earth and doesn't have 45,000 adoring people hanging on every action.
And also, to be fair,
maybe they should.
There isn't a load of people stopping him. Post the letters. He just walks up and pushes it in. You know what I mean? It's not a difficult thing.
And let's be honest, if a postman, right, if he had like a tricky dog to get past,
yeah.
I bet he would do a little.
Yes.
If he emerged without being bitten. Yeah, yeah. What a fucking horrible minge bag.
There is no right answer to that question, is there?
It's probably Jovanovic because, like, you can get by with Firmino and Salah, you know what I mean, or Mane and Salah or whatever. You could get by with, you could probably still win the league with two from three of our front three. And Jovanovic's just providing width. Just go and stand on the touchline, mate. And we'll, every now and again, we'll shape to pass to you.
But no one to mark him because they know he's shit.
Yeah, I mean, now, eventually, Lord of Diminishing Returns.
If the question was about squad, I probably would still go Konchesky because, you know, Tsimikas has got, like, an injury. So he's out at the moment. So we could probably do with a backup left back at the moment that's not James Milner.
Wasn't Christian Poulsen like a Danish international? I mean, we remember him the worst, but he was probably... Actually, you know, Balotelli was probably the best on paper. Italian international, played in major international tournaments. Poulsen probably wasn't, like, I think we've stigmatized, but I'm probably gonna get slaughtered for this.
He was terrible.
Yeah, he was terrible for us, but I don't think he was. Paul Konchesky was fucking rubbish, and yeah, Jovanovic, I have no idea what he did pre or post
to us. Poulsen fell foul of Roy Hodgson's system, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that was it. He just wasn't good. They're good enough to play for us. Okay. I mean, they're certainly not good enough now. I'm actually interested. I have no idea what happened to Milan Jovanovic. Does anyone care?
Nope.
No? Yeah, okay. Well, I'll find out anyway. He was mentioned in Neighbours once. I think it was. That was great. He went to Anderlecht after us.
Cool.
And I think he just died. I think he's dead.
No, career ended two seasons after that. There you go. It was just as interesting as that gets. Right, yeah.
Maybe he wouldn't be the best pick to go in the front three then, considering, you know, he ended his career at age 26 when no one gave him a club.
Yeah, I mean, think about the celebrations if he still managed to score for us, though, compared to Balotelli. Yeah, let us know in the comments. Actually, I've completely forgotten to get them up for this, but I will do momentarily. Right, we're going to be discussing Liverpool's lack of immunity to the madness of football.
Because of COVID, then.
Well, COVID as well, quite clearly, as Shaqiri joins the isolating list. Buvac hasn't congratulated anyone from Liverpool on the title win. No new goalkeeper, as we've seen, as the transfer window has shut. And a little bit about the other bits of piece of madness that have happened around the Premier League this weekend and all that. Once again, I've had no pre-conversation with Simon about this. Simon, have you got the merch advert? A membership advert?
No.
No, of course not. You can join Red memberships right now. You get access to custom emotes, which you can use in all of our live streams, just like this one, and the watch-alongs as well. If you join at Club Captain or Club Legend level, you get the final word show, the weekend final word show, which, I mean, sounds like a shit offering this week because it's an hour talking about Liverpool getting beat 7-2. Because I really, really enjoyed that show more than I felt.
Yeah, I remember sitting here Sunday night and saying, you know, once that final word's over and done with, I'll forget about the results. And it worked. Yeah. Like, I've got that monkey off my back now. It's ready to move forward. It's Everton now, once, you know, we get our players back and hopefully they're all alive.
And once we finish talking about it today on this show.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, very, very good, very therapeutic. And yeah, you can get involved with all of that, of course. So yeah, Ross, it was just a mad weekend of football. So we'll talk about the other teams in a little bit. But I think we all, particularly because City dropped points again and we were so good on the Monday against Arsenal, I genuinely felt like we were going to be, like, footy would just be crazy, but Liverpool would just be Liverpool. And yeah, and like 7-2 is, like, I think this kind of stuff is going to continue to happen. So again, it's annoying that it's happened to Liverpool, but I'm also taking a little bit of solace that we're not the only club that's had mad results since the football's come back.
No, and for all the reasons we spoke about in the final word of, like, you know, this isn't a regular thing for Liverpool, is it? You know, I think we cited the Spurs game and probably Stoke 6-1, Watford as well. You know, we're very, very lucky we get to watch this football team week in, week out. I said the same thing. You know, City got shafted, Man United got shafted. You know, I think there's only Everton that the only team of, you know, 4-4 at the minute, which is the only annoying thing. And on paper, you know, Leeds first game, Chelsea and Arsenal, be like, we come through all them. So on paper, Aston Villa was like, oh, Sam, this would be a piece of piss. And maybe that crept into the players' heads as well.
It was, yeah, it's just really annoying, isn't it? Because I just had no idea what to expect from this season, really. And I think we've maybe lulled ourselves into a false sense of security that everything was just going to continue. We're just going to pick up where we left off and footy was proper again. And yeah, again, it's just something we're going to have to be aware of moving forward.
Make no mistake about it, for me, the fans is making a massive difference to this season. I don't know whether it's giving teams confidence or it's not giving some teams confidence or whatever, but these type of results are starting to look a little bit like the normal 4 weeks into the season. And, you know, I don't know whether you need to change your approach to games, whether you need to start faster. But then you could say that, and then Tottenham go 1-0 down and go and absolutely batter Manchester United, so maybe that's not the answer. But I think you need to try and break a team very early in the game and make them think that there's no way back in, make them think that normally we'd have fans there cheering us on and all that type of stuff. So I tend to fall on that line. Start fast, first 20 minutes, try and blow a team out, get a couple of goals up and see what happens, whether you can mentally break the side, because I think Liverpool were mentally broken on Sunday against Aston Villa. I think they did that to us. I think you've also got to take into consideration that Aston Villa have had a week's longer pre-season than everybody else, which has come out, I think I saw on Twitter last night. So I think that's a really interesting point as well. Maybe they're just a bit more on it than Liverpool were, but that's no excuse. I mean, two things happened. Liverpool played the worst they've played in years, and Aston Villa played absolutely brilliantly. And when those two things happen at the same time, you get mad results like this.
The thing that I think is important to look at in this is momentum. And in momentum in games, crowds shift momentum one way or the other. So if you're losing, a crowd can drag you up from nothing.
And equally, you know, a crowd can beat you into nothing. But also, if you're on top and you're cruising, a crowd can go flat and it can suck the energy out of what your team's doing. Whereas I wonder whether just the absence of crowds, and this is a good, the weekend was a good example of that. I think it's very, very difficult to shift momentum in matches. I mean, I don't know about anyone's had personal experience in footy, but I've had this all the time. I play for so many terrible football teams that when you went 2 or 3 down, you knew it was done. And there could have been 15 minutes gone in a football match. It's very, you need a certain number of things to go your way. You need a bit of luck, or maybe you need the right type of players and the right mentality. There's an interesting comment here in the live comments from Knox here saying, games like Sunday make you realise what Hendo brings to this team. No way would he have allowed that performance. I touched upon this in the final way, Ross. Let's look at personnel as an example of this. We can't have crowds. So we do we need a couple more lads on the pitch who are just the kind of lads who don't take no for an answer to kind of help us should momentum shift against us in a game?
Yeah, I think it's individual basis or maybe even team basis. You look at West Ham, you know, they've beaten Wolves and then they went and beat Leicester away at the weekend as well. So the crowds to them, you know, on the face of it, looks like it benefits them. For Liverpool, I said on the final word, like I think by the time Milner came on, the game was done, but in-game management's a massive thing for those Liverpool players, and like the system didn't work. I know Klopp changed it at half time and went to 4-2-3-1, but again, that was a roll of dice by it was done. If you have Henderson in there, you look really confused.
One of you is just shaking the table weirdly. It's really confused me. Who could it possibly be? I've been watching a lot of Jurassic Park. The fucking liquid in my tea was going. Yeah. I was like, fucking really.
That's all we need for 2020 is fucking dinosaurs coming back in. Fuck me. Henderson would have benefited, but you know he wasn't used and clearly wasn't ready to play that game. So and again, it was done. So why risk him for?
Oh, but this is. I'm not saying this. We should have brought Jordan Henderson in. This isn't that conversation. This is taking Sunday and moving forward from that. Is I think this will happen again because at the moment, what looks like the best way to beat Liverpool is to do what Leeds and Villa have done, is to try and do what Chris is saying our approach should be, is to fly at you and try and get the momentum in your favour. And I'm saying it's very difficult now to claw momentum back because it is in football matches. And whether moving forward, the importance of Jordan Henderson and a Thiago Alcantara, an example, could prove to be even more important than we think.
Well, fitness and squad depth will be huge for teams. Like the first 2 weeks very much felt like trying to catch each other out of who's fit, who's ready for this season. And that's why you were seeing, you know, scores of, you know, 4-3 like for Liverpool. And Leeds have continued to do that. Squad depth is another thing. I think the use of 3 substitutions is fine for some players, but for some teams, sorry. But Liverpool having, you know, now we've seen the transfer window close. Like we're going to reap the rewards of Shaqiri staying or, you know, Gruitch and stuff because you get to Christmas, December, sound. Klopp's got 20-odd people he can choose from. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, when Aston Villa, who might get 2-3 injuries, but they haven't got the squad depth.
Might not even be able to register Gruitch.
Yeah, or Shaqiri.
It's one of the two of them's probably not going to be able to be registered because of the rules around homegrown players and 17 internationals or whatever. It's funny, isn't it? Because momentum, you know, so many people say that it doesn't exist in sports and I just completely disagree with that, to be honest with you.
It's not meant to exist game on game, game by game, but it definitely exists.
I think it does both, to be honest with you. I think if you just take what people say where momentum doesn't exist in sports and look at every fucking game you've ever watched and just look at it and try and look at it from a point of view is where is the momentum? If you just take a step back, it exists. Like fans make a difference to games. Fans can bring you back into games or lose games for you. And you just have to see, like when teams go on 26 games run, that's momentum. You know what I mean? Whether that's momentum or it's confidence from the last 25 results, call it what you want. It fucking exists there somewhere. So I have a tendency to agree with you. I think the no fans thing, you need a vocal side. I think Bayern Munich have been the most vocal side. I thought Liverpool have been probably the second most vocal side that I've seen in games where you can hear what's going on, and it's like you're creating your own noise. You're trying to suffocate them with your words, and you're trying to get into their heads and stuff. It depends what type of a player you are, of course, because, you know, I know people that are dead loud on the footy field who are boss, and I know people who are dead loud on the footy field who are shit.
Yeah.
You know, and vice versa. I know quiet people, but I think as a team, you need leaders. You need people shouting, keeping them on the edge of the toes and all that type of stuff, and just making sure that they're on it each and every single day. Liverpool have got a squad full of leaders, but are they the right type of leaders for those type of situations? Is Virgil van Dijk the right type of leader for when everything's gone to shit?
Yeah.
Probably not. But when you're 3-0 up and you want someone to an air of confidence, a great leader...
You can't grab the game by the scruff of the neck from centre-half.
No, and not with a calmness like Virgil, but you can when you're a Henderson or you're a James Milner and you're loud and you're vocal.
Sadio Mane as well. I mean, that's one thing that's considered... Because I think Mo Salah did everything in his power to grab the game and try and drag it towards something. He looked on it. You know, it's interesting. I saw someone... There was like the highlights compilation of his performance. So how can you have a 9 out of 10 performance in a game where you've lost 7-2? And it was because Salah was just being Salah. He was trying to get on the ball. He was trying to score. He was trying to drag the team forward. And Andy Robertson as well, I think, to some extent. But there needed just to be one or two more. And Mane's another example of that. Is Mane will just go, get the ball, beat three men. And everyone goes, right, okay. Well, Sadio's on it today, so come on, lads, let's charge behind Sadio. Henderson similar in the midfield, and again, it's too soon to tell on Thiago, but again, I feel like he's an additional reason to buying him is because of the current footballing climate and environment, because you need players who are supremely confident winners, whose whole style of play is to just encourage us to, again, to drown the life out of the opposition. And also,
going back to the momentum thing, I think you need players who can change momentum. Suarez was a player who could change momentum. No matter how he's playing at any point during the game, he could swing it in your favour. Mane's one of those players. Mm-hmm. He can have a shit game, but you can give him the ball, he'll beat two men and stick it in the back of the net. It doesn't matter to him what the game state is like or how he's performing. So Salah's one of those players, mm-hmm. absolutely. Other than that, but I wouldn't say Bobby was one of those players, but Mane certainly is, so we were missing one of ours.
Yeah, I mean, and look, again, in terms of momentum, it stems from setting the tone, I think, in football matches. And look, Mane could have been sent off against Arsenal, he could have done, but he also told the Arsenal players that he wasn't going to take any shit by doing so, Ross. You know, he'd be very physical from the first minute, and when one of your wingers, effectively, is doing that, then, you know, it puts the fear or doubt into opposition minds, and we didn't really have any of that against Aston Villa, to be honest. But I think Virgil did it by the fact of being slightly off the pace.
Just on Virgil, right? If say Milner makes that tackle that Virgil gets a yellow card for, you're probably like, go on, Milner's going to G the lads up. When it's Virgil, who's someone who's a calm player, I got the exact opposite. Yeah, the exact opposite. So it does depend on what type of a player you are and what type of a leader you are, mm-hmm. how other players on the field react to that.
Yeah, if you're like a touchline suit manager and you start like cracking, it looks like you've cracked, not like you've decided to do something positive. It's like that time that we had that teacher, we won't name his name, but he basically tripped over the desk. And decided, rather than go, I've just tripped over the desk and get buzzed off by the class, he pretended it was his new teaching method and started like jumping around, like it's about, and he's like, what are you doing, you fucking idiot, you've lost the plot. And he started like screaming at like desks, at like drawers and fucking things and all this. Like he stumbled upon a new teaching method. He's like, nah, you've lost the plot, mate, you fucking weirdo. But yeah, I mean, sorry, Ross, anyway. But Chris is right in that, isn't it? You know, you've got to have those type of players for those type of games, and we didn't, nobody from the Liverpool team set the tone in the early stages.
No, and not only that, because the game was so erratic, like a Mane can win you a free kick and just calm things down or get you possession in their third, whereas it was pinball, wasn't it, for 90 minutes. But on Van Dijk, like, he went to ground twice in that game. He never does that.
No.
So I had the exact same reaction of going like, oh, like either his head's gone or he just can't be arsed for this, or the yellow card incident, like he's just gone, oh, fuck this, I've had enough, and he's taken him out, you know. And it's the same for managers, I suppose. Like when Guardiola was when we played at Anfield and you see him losing his head, that plays into the rest of the squad as well then, doesn't it? And is that same for Liverpool?
Yeah,
Liverpool players see Virgil van Dijk go, oh shit, he's gone to ground here.
Yeah. Well, look, a great example of this, and I know it's really near the end of the game, but Klopp sits on the hoardings. Klopp never sits on the hoardings. Now it's 7-2. Every player doesn't need Klopp sitting on the hoardings to tell them that the game's over.
Yeah.
But the game's over when the manager just goes, okay, I'm just going to sit over here. Like,
yeah, it's true, isn't it? You do, the mean accounts for a lot. I think the Pep example is perfect because if Pep Guardiola loses his head in a football match, City lose.
Yeah,
they do. You know, or they're on the, or you know, they're not going to claw it back in any way, shape, or form. It's him doing the
twice,
or him getting sent off in the Champions League against us, at, you know, at half time and all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, it is a thing, and Liverpool do need to do more of that in football matches. I think you keep not just keeping their heads, but also having lads who just turn around and like, no, you. More. I want more from you. I don't want your head to drop on easy because it shouldn't be underestimated. Like, again, like your Joe Gomez's and your Trent Alexander-Arnold, who both had pretty poor games, are both still relatively young lads. And you know, Virgil van Dijk is, I always say, and he's definitely more of a Gerrard type captain. He's much more of a roll your eyes and give you a withering glance than a, come on, mate, you can do it, pick yourself up, go, let's let it all, you know what I mean? That which is what I think Jordan Henderson does a bit of both. I don't think Hendo takes any shit, but I also think he is definitely like, he's the kind of guy who would run back in a fucking marathon and fucking and drag it across the finish line.
Henderson screams at people. He does.
Like, yeah, oh yeah.
He spends most of the game doing it to the referee, so God knows. Like, and again, that's what we're missing, but I didn't see any of that. Like, even when, you know, after goals or chances, it wasn't like Virgil van Dijk screaming at people. Because that's not the type of player he is, but maybe he needs to adapt to that.
Yeah.
You know, we always talk about Liverpool being winners now and their winning mentality. Well, it's fine if you show up, but sometimes you need that grit that Henderson's got to take you through, and it just shows how much we missed him.
Look, Manchester City's a perfect example of how important leadership is in a side. Company, great defender, but his leadership was more important than his defensive technique and abilities. And look what's happened to them since. They've had basically a year and a bit now where they're still trying to replace him. That leadership is so important that we just don't talk about it enough.
Yeah, no, I completely
and
agree.
And it was Fabian Delph as well who used to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Just want to take a brief pause to say welcome to Matt Williams, who's joined as a club
Thank
captain
you, Matt.
On YouTube membership, who gets access
Matt
to
Bill.
Matty Bill, yeah. who gets access to the Final Word shows every single week. We will take comments if anyone wants to throw some bits and pieces into the comments. We will talk through a few of them as we go. I have, thanks. I the LFC 101 saying, come on, you Reds. We'll be there through hard times too. Yeah, I mean, me and Chris made a big point of this, Ross, is that, and it's going to be hard because at the moment we're only a couple of days in now to the break. 2 weeks is a very long time when Liverpool haven't won the game prior to it. You know, think about the break between the Community Shield and the league start, and it was just absolutely toxic for a while. And it's important to remember this. And this isn't like a, like, let's all be happy, clappy, ultra-positive dickheads. It's that, you know, sometimes you lose football matches. You don't often lose them as ridiculously as this. So we've all kind of got to sit here and take our beatings.
I think everyone just hates the international break full stop, don't they? You know, if you lose going into it, then you don't like it. If you're on a winning streak of four games, you know, have we won on Sunday? Like, oh, fucking hell, international break. Like, what a bad time to have this. So that can just get in the bin as far as I'm concerned. But I get there's concerns from Liverpool's form from the back end of last season. I know that the season was done and stuff, but I think that plays into people's minds even more. And then we've got 2 weeks to kind of sit and stew on something because football's so quick. We played three games in 6 days last week.
The worst of us, and I mean, worst of us, weakest of us, you know, whatever it is. And we all have these moments, by the way. Like the fatalists among Liverpool's fan base, it never goes away. But they also most people will just switch off social media. But the ones of us who creep into it and to have a look are brought down by the ones whose heads go the quickest because it's causality. It's whenever something negative happens, it's immediately tacked onto every negative thing that happened in the build up to it, or at any point in the past, as long back as you want to serve the purpose that will feed your anxieties and fears over it. Whereas Liverpool are on a 3-game winning streak in the league. Added in the really big League Cup win in the mix as that, and the ones who were most upbeat about it were like, well, that's just Liverpool back to being the team that put down 196 points over two seasons or whatever it was. Neither of them's correct because, again, as much as a form of momentum does exist, also, again, statistically, momentum doesn't quite exist in that same way, particularly given the gap between, you know, the various things. But I mean, ultimately, the point is, Chris, is that. To go a bit Klopp,
it's just football. You know, there's nothing we can kind of do about it. You've got to take the rough with, and you've got to take the smooth.
Yeah, and you've got to, Liverpool have got to go out there and prove that it was a one-off. Yeah. Right now, there's a lot of people sitting there. I will tell you, I think that's a one-off. But you can't make any hard, fast judgments on it until there's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 more games.
Yeah.
Either way, whether you think it's a sign of something that's systemic within the club or whatever, you can't make a decision on that until you've got another 10 games, because we've lost one game this season out of four.
Yeah.
You know, until you've got the analytics to be able to suggest that it's more than that, shut up. Yeah. Quite frankly, because I remember sitting here a week before thinking that's one of the best performances we've put in against Arsenal. Now, and Liverpool have got better each game as well. You know, obviously there's things with the Chelsea game and stuff, but that Arsenal performance was a complete performance. And then obviously the performance at the weekend was a fucking shit show.
Complete shit show. Complete performance, complete disaster. Zeta says, Villa fan here, in peace. Over the years, we've had a decent record against Liverpool. I think Sunday was a freak result. You lot had a surprisingly off day, and we had an unusual on day. Good luck for the season. Brilliant.
They
comment.
Were brilliant.
Thank you.
They were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, they deserve loads of credit. I mean, Barkley was class, but Jack Grealish was. Jack Grealish was the player that everyone, you know, the people who blindly love Jack Grealish and have done for a number of years, that's the player that everyone's been talking about. Like, if he played like that every week, he'll be one of the best players in the Premier League, because he's, look at him, I don't know how tall he is, but he looks over 6 foot. He looks strong, powerful, he's got good pace, he's got unbelievable, he pulls Virgil van Dijk's pants down. Have you seen that clip?
Yeah, and he nutmegs him as well.
Oh, my God. Like, you know, Virgil van Dijk needs to go and sit in the corner and look at the wall for 15 minutes after that. He needs to get put on the naughty step. Yeah, because that's just unacceptable, like, that you can have your pants pulled down so significantly. But it's all the credit in the world to Jack Grealish for that. The great Metropolis here saying there, the high line nearly cost us against Leeds and Arsenal. Not a one-off. We said this, Chris, on the Final Word Show, but it's worth repeating on the public podcast, is this is the thing we have to brace ourselves for. It's banter off rival fans, but it's also really, really, I think, and I don't want to dig Great Metropolis out here, but it's very knee-jerk reaction analysis to the high line, as though the style of play that Liverpool have built towards and constructed over the years needs to get fucked off. Because we got beat in this game and opposition teams have had another couple of chances, completely ignoring the fact that if you play a low block, you can concede chances.
And ignore the fact we won a Premier League and a Champions League with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like, Aston Villa got loads and loads of men behind the ball and we had as many shots on target as they did. So you get the
yeah,
point.
I think...
Not clear cut.
No, look, the application of the high line at the weekend was atrocious.
Yes.
There's nothing to say other than that, but you can train how to get better at it. You can train when to drop and when to push forwards. And I think that's the problem at the moment. We're not applying that high line at quite the same level as we were last season, and teams are attacking it more now. And I don't know why that is or whatever, but and I do think that, you know, Trent not being as involved going forwards is not helping us with the high line, because it's not forcing the likes of Grealish and Watkins to think about him going forwards. I think Robbo did all right, but then Robbo's not getting attacked behind him.
Yeah.
So whether it's in Trent's head or it's a team thing where he's not quite fit enough to get up and down the pitch every single game in the same manner as he did last time, whether the talking between Gomez, Van Dijk, Trent and Robertson isn't as good as last time. You see players moving in opposite directions, and that's what I've seen so far this season. I didn't see any of that last season.
Yeah.
If they're all moving in sync with each other and at the right time, the high line can work. You can still concede chances, absolutely, and you will do. But for me, it's the application of the high line that's the issue at the moment.
I wonder whether there's just something to Arsenal and the Community Shield, and you know, and probably, you know, other teams maybe were in post-lockdown, but they don't spring to mind as much. But how Aubameyang was used in that Community Shield game, just put him high and wide and don't ask him to defend, and you make Liverpool make a decision there. Is like, does Trent want to get caught out? Because he's going to get the stick. Doesn't matter whether he's being told to push on or not. You put the fear of doubt into Trent's mind that if this does break down and I'm out of position, I'm going to get absolutely slaughtered for it. And I just wonder whether it's a bit like, you remember when Brendan Rodgers did that mad leave three men up for a corner thing? Whether teams are doing that a bit, going, well, look, Liverpool can fucking batter us. They can batter us with 11 men behind, or, you know, with 10, but we give ourselves a bit more chance, and maybe teams are just sacrificing
a defence, someone to track
I
back
think,
in.
I think you're probably right. For me, when I look at it and I try and analyse it, right, I wonder whether changing Fabinho's position slightly will help us with this. And we're going to have to do something. I don't know exactly what it is. But, you know, you see so many teams with defensive midfielders dropping into centre-half. I just wonder whether if Fabinho did that and the two full-backs went forwards, then Gomez and Van Dijk just split slightly, whether that might be an option for us moving forward.
Well, the other thing we've seen, I mean, Naby, when he was playing, when he played brilliantly against Arsenal in the first half, he was actually dropping in there into Trent's position. He was playing it right back
at
times.
They do that a lot when they transition forwards and therefore Naby's there. I don't think he's the right type of player in that position, which is what led me to the thoughts around Fabinho, because Gomez is okay there. And I think the problem that we've had at the moment is last season, for me anyway, whenever we were engaging or running backwards to let the opposition have it, we seemed to make the right decision at the right time. Think of their last goal, Grealish's little chip one, actually, that goes towards near post of Adrian. Trent doesn't run back. Trent tries to intercept the ball.
Yeah.
Now, that's if he makes the right decision and runs back, the end result might have been slightly different.
Yeah.
So to me, you still, even with a high line, you're still going to make the right decision at the right point.
Yeah.
And I just wonder whether we're engaging or not engaging at the wrong points at the moment for me, and individual errors is still costing us.
And it's worth remembering in all of this, and again, this is, by the way, this is true to differing levels for all teams, Ross, but we've become so used to Liverpool just not losing in the league that we forget that it does take 2 months to get up to speed, and that's when you've had a proper pre-season, which Liverpool haven't. So we're judging this football on the standards of what we, I mean, because again, just watching it on telly, if you only ever watch footy on telly, then you won't appreciate there's a difference in it. It's just the same package. It looks a bit different because there's not people jumping up and around in the stands. And all the things, you know, again, these are players who've not come in a pre-season. So we're judging the standards of the football as though it's the normal football, because we're being told now that this is footy. We actually don't know how to judge this type of football anymore.
Yeah, but equally Aston Villa haven't had a proper pre-season either.
No, but that's the point. What I mean is that I'm saying it's true across the board, but we're the standards by which we're going, we're expecting everyone to be perfect, and everyone's not going to be perfect. That's why there's loads more freak, another contributing factor towards freak results is because every player in the league is a little bit off the rest, and it's going to take them longer than we even understand to find the normal equilibrium in a non-normal way of playing football.
And probably even more so when you look at Jota. Like, I don't want to single him out, but maybe that's the importance highlighted of Manny's defensive work as well. Like, we lost the ball in midfield loads because we were just overrun. Maybe Jota's still, you know, trying to adapt to our system and learn that system. I know they said he was really good at it, but also, like, Manny's been doing it for 2, 3, 4 years now, hasn't he? But with Jota, you throw him in, you put Naby on the right, which he doesn't normally do, just completely fucks things up. You know, he's got to be aware of where Trent is, and, you know, that knowledge versus understanding chat that you have with Dave Maddock, that's still that important. So when you're saying there's no pre-season for them, you're integrating new players and you're having a bit of a shit day anyway. Like, fucking Joe Gomez's head dropped quicker than the defensive line did. You're gonna have a bad time, and I expect Liverpool will probably lose again. I think you're right. We don't like it when Liverpool lose. We're going to hate it when we get battered 7-2 by Aston Villa, and it's going to happen again. Same with Watford. Like I said the other day, when we were at a Watford game, everybody was terrible. Everybody's head went, and I was like, fucking hell, we haven't lost, then we get battered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The point of this, Chris, is that every season, again, we've been spoiled the last 2 years because Liverpool have started both seasons absolutely brilliantly, is that it always takes a little bit of time to get up to speed. So you have to kind of reserve judgments. You can't judge really where the team's at because it's not hit its groove just yet. So regardless of how any of us feel about it, it is a bit early doors really to be doing any deep dive analysis into how Liverpool are performing.
We just don't, as you kind of alluded to a little bit earlier on, we don't know what it's supposed to look like this season. We don't know what it's going to look like because we can't judge it on previous years when there's been crowds. It's not a previous year. It's a completely different year and everything. The whole fucking world's changed at the moment. Is it any surprise that, you know, Liverpool players might have just been worried going into that game? It might have just affected them mentally about, you know, Sadio Mane. Now Shaqiri's picked it up. I don't know whether they'd have known about that. There's rumours of blazing rows till very late at night on Sunday after the game. Like, there's just fucking all kinds going on at the moment. And, you know, not only that, people are worried about the family. People are maybe a little bit depressed because they're not able to go and speak to the family and all this type of stuff. And Liverpool players are probably in a much worse situation than us because they're being mollycoddled. Mm-hmm. They're going to be so under such strict isolation and bubble fucking rules that their whole head might be gone. And then all of a sudden you fucking 4-1 down at half time and you're like, this is shit. What am I even doing all this for if we're just getting beat 4-1 anyway? The amount, like, I'm not seeing my friends and family and all this. It must be so difficult. And it's difficult for everyone, not just footballers.
Yeah, that's it. And again, I think this is one of those things where my gut feeling on this is, and we'll have to get lucky with injuries. We will, you know, and fitness and COVID and all those kind of things. But I just think, you know, moving forward, if you've got one more of Henderson, Mane, Thiago on the pitch, I think it eases a lot of that. But I think particularly, I think in the heart of the team, at the business, the end of the pitch where you need to drive games forward, I think that, you know, having more of that personnel will definitely aid us. Hakon Myra says, I thought the 7-2 loss would be devastating, and to some extent it is, but I was laughing the whole game. Everything that could have gone wrong to a Klopp side did, but the lads will get back to winning ways. The season's mad. Yeah, exactly that. It was a feeling of utter lunacy that kind of crept over us all during that match.
Social media wasn't that bad on Sunday. I enjoyed it, but like, I was pretty surprised at the reaction. I thought everyone's heads were going to fall off and have to switch the fucking thing off, but it was like, oh, sad.
I was made up with the reaction from people, actually, while we were doing the watch along, Chris. That there were rival fans in there, but again, I feel there's an immunity to all of that stuff at the moment because we're so good.
We've given it out for 2 years.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. And then I think I'm pleased that largely people have kind of just gone, yeah. You know, if they do it again, then, you know, they do it in back-to-back games, there's a time to start being worried. But at the moment, it's a freak result, and I think we can all largely kind of treat it
as
such.
Listen, if it is a freak result, it might make us a stronger, better side off the back of it. And again, you know, the two best sides for me in world football are Bayern Munich and Liverpool. And I've mentioned them a few times today already, but, you know, Bayern Munich only become the Bayern Munich of today when we hammered them in their own ground in the Champions League two years ago. And that's what's the springboard for their future successes. Mm-hmm. Now, if Aston Villa beating it dead early on in the league forces us to go out and improve and get better, then you take a 3-point loss for that.
Yeah, I look at Liverpool. I think it maybe feels a bit like, because Liverpool have lost 3 games this season, but two of them were penalty shootouts, and the other one is a 7-2 absolute, you know, freak show mauling. And so I think, you know, when you look at it realistically, you know, again, if those weren't cup games, you've actually drawn two and lost one. You know, and that's why this very much looks like an anomaly.
It kind of is what it is.
So early in the season as well, isn't it?
Exactly. It's just some kind of saying, you know, overall and all this. It's far too early for anyone to be like, this requires X, Y, and Z to be done. There's
unless you're an Everton fan, in which case, fucking enjoy it.
Oh, God.
Enjoy it at the moment for them. Like.
And why not? Scott Hawks with the $25 US Super Chat. Thank you, Scott. He's an amazing human being. The high line is one part of our entire way of playing. The high line was the problem as much as not pressing the ball was, as much as bad ball controlling key areas, etc., etc. Yeah, as much as not taking chances. But it's just... I keep putting it out to it. They had three efforts that I just think Adrian saves, or they may even miss, and they end up in the completely away from the goalkeeper because they go in. It's just the butterfly effect, like, you know, chaos theory, whatever you want to go to. They can go absolutely anywhere, and equally like the Bobby Firmino chance when he gets through on goal and he gets a shot off on the keeper. That's probably on XG a much better chance than three of their goals
added together.
Yeah, literally.
The only way that could have gone worse was a red card and four injuries.
Oh God, definitely. Isaac Rebello from New Zealand, $5 says some fans losing their heads after effectively an anomaly. It's easy for me to say. If I can get through pre-Klopp. LFC, I can get through anything. Agreed, yeah. And Scott adds one more. Our standard play takes a lot of time to become second nature. It's why Jürgen waits to put players in the side usually. We had no pre-season and we don't have much time in training due to the number of matches. And yeah, again, I think Liverpool are best placed to continue a level because it's largely the same squad. In fact, vast majority of the same squad. They all used to play with each other. So I think we should, largely speaking, be the most capable of maintaining a level because we're not going through a rebuild and we do have a deep level of understanding and we have got a squad full of proven winners now. But I think it shows that anyone's beatable and you know, the fact that it's a freakish shows that, yeah.
We should know that.
Yeah.
We should know that anyone's beatable. Yeah. We've been watching football for 35 years.
Yeah.
It's a constant, you know what I mean? Teams just don't very rarely go through seasons unbeaten. Even the Invincibles lost in games, not in the fucking league. You know what I mean? It happens every single year to every fucking team. We've lost a game.
Yeah, shit happens. Ross, Zeljko Buvac has apparently been interviewed for a documentary and he revealed that he hasn't congratulated anyone from Liverpool on the title win. And again, I got this from Empire of the Cop, so I don't know where the translation or whatever.
It was a YouTube video that's been taken down.
Really? He effectively was talking about he's been doing Klopp's work for 17 years. What a massive tit.
Do you know what? We did it on the news show yesterday and I think he basically said he does all the work besides the media stuff. For Mainz, Dortmund and Liverpool. So basically Klopp just fucking puts the cones out for him. I think he didn't say that, by the way. Yeah. That's what he was saying. It's just the timing of it is so fucking weird. Like
Particularly now.
Where was this conversation when we just won the Premier League or just won the Champions League? You know, he wasn't.
He was probably having the same Houllier style. Well, it was my team fucking conversations. That's basically what he did.
I taught fucking Virgil van Dijk how to head the ball. Okay, mate, of course you did. Sound like he said he was happy for the fans and all that, and it was dead interesting because in the article it kind of said note the omission from he didn't say Jurgen Klopp's name, so he's like, I'm happy for the fans, for the staff, for everybody else, and like, I just want to know what the fucking beef is, to be honest with you.
Yeah, what's the beef? What is the beef? We've seen this kind of stuff before. You mentioned it earlier and that, like, it's just the thing about it is that, again, it's just it's the timing, Chris. You know, we've now got, and this is one of the kind of shit I'm talking about, because we have this running joke here on Redmen TV about what is going to cause Liverpool fan fume during the international break, because something always kicks off. And this has got all the hallmarks of that, of people staring up this whole... I mean, most people will just laugh it off, and we all should, but... Yeah, this has got all the hallmarks of just seeing a little mings on Twitter kicking off about
you know what, there's a few ways that you can look at this. One is, look, was he replaced? Yes, he was replaced. You know, Pep Linders is coming as at the time, the co-assistant manager. I think he still is the co-assistant manager, is he? But regardless of that, you know, it's not the same side and we don't play the same way as we did do. Now, maybe he wanted a message off Jürgen, well, thanks for all your help over the last 17 years. We've finally done it and didn't get it. Maybe he's that disgruntled ex that feels like he built him. But the fact of the matter is, you can be a great coach, doesn't mean you're a great manager. And you can be a great manager and not be a great coach. And I'm not saying Klopp is any of those things, but certainly Klopp is the one manager in world football who I see recognise what the team around him does more than any other manager. So it's really surprising to say this about Jürgen when every time you speak to him, he's like, it's the people around me. They're the ones who do this.
Something we always talk about, having worked in restaurants because for so long, is like the assistant manager syndrome, where it's always assistant manager or duty managers as well who just value their own importance more highly.
Everybody does it. It's not just the fucking assistant managers. You leave a work and you think in some parts of you it'll get worse.
Yeah.
It never does. It just carries on, you know, and sometimes it can get better and sometimes it can get worse and sometimes it's a slow fade. Like, Everton, Martinez's first season in charge was built on Moyes' defence.
Yeah.
And he had a brilliant first season and everyone thought they were going to do really well. And then that knowledge and that reinforced coaching from Moyes and the defensive side of things, in Martinez's second year, it fell to shit.
Yeah.
But in the first year, he looked like the greatest manager ever because he's using the same players to do better than Moyes ever did.
Yeah.
It just happens.
Yeah, definitely. I see it all the time. You just, again, and again, it's a bit on the disrespectful side, because Bubas was class for us. I don't think there's any, you know, he's obviously had a brilliant career alongside Jürgen Klopp. He deserves credit and respect for what he's achieved in the game. And like Klopp told us to respect him, you know, and Klopp told Liverpool to respect him and the way he was treated when we brought him in.
And the way he was treated when he left, the fact that no one said anything.
Yeah,
absolutely. That shows a level of respect as
but
well.
This has all, this does just bear those hallmarks of, you know, it's someone who goes the extra mile and it's all the intangibles. I go, you see it in restaurants all the time where you see the manager as being the guy who sat around in the office with his feet up doing fuck all because he doesn't have to get his hands dirty in the trenches, and you feel like really it's the assistant manager that makes it all work. And in most restaurants, to some extent it is, but also it's the intangibles that the manager brings. Bubat isn't at Liverpool if Klopp doesn't exist. He isn't at Dortmund if Klopp doesn't exist. You know, it's Jürgen Klopp, whether if Jürgen Klopp does nothing, which is nonsense by the way, in terms of his understanding of the technical side and the training and all that kind of stuff, Jürgen Klopp's personality and charisma allows the club to function the way that it does, because he allows everyone to be loads freer in all that kind of stuff. So it does smack a bitterness more than anything.
It was also interesting, that article, he also got asked like about him doing management. He's like, oh, I don't fancy it now, because I think he's a sporting director somewhere. He's like, oh, I've got loads of offers and I turn them all down. I was like, oh, that's fine. But like, you know, you can't say like you did all the work and then someone says, do you want to be manager?
Go, I'm the best. I'm the best manager that ever is.
Prove it. Prove it, Paul.
I don't fancy it now, actually. It's shit. Smells really bad being a manager, so nah.
This is all from a translated YouTube video, isn't it? Context and everything. I mean, you know, I don't know how it was edited, as I say, it's been pulled down, so I've not even able to watch it. So you're reading the written words, and that we know that's not always the most truthful of words.
Yeah, open to interpretation. Transfer wise, no new goalkeeper. I mean, there was never going to be a new goalkeeper, because we were never going to sign someone else. And if there's one potential weakness I think Jürgen does have, I don't think he knows what a good goalkeeper really looks like. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously we've got Alisson, and maybe he had a key hand in choosing, selecting Alisson, whatever. But the way that he talks about goalkeepers, and let's be honest, like his Dortmund goalkeepers weren't, you never had the best goalkeepers in the world at Dortmund. And some of the ones that we've seen in and around Liverpool, I do wonder whether he just thinks a goalkeeper's a goalkeeper. Like he's just made up, maybe he's made up with Adrian. I don't know. It was Liverpool, I don't think we're ever going to do any knee-jerk reactionary business. They clearly decided that maybe Adrian can be improved upon, but it wasn't something they were ever going to improve on this window.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean to say that we don't do it in January. Mm-hmm. But with 24 hours left in the window, when you're probably thinking going into that you don't need a goalkeeper, it's really desperate. It's like, it's Man United Cavani levels of desperation at that point. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had, 3.5 months of being able to pick Cavani up for whatever they want and did it on the last day.
Yeah.
I'm going to obviously throw shade while I talk this
point. Oh, God, through. Absolutely.
Because you need to, obviously. Look, I don't think Adjin's good enough. Is he good enough to be a number two? Yeah, he's good enough to be a number two. Is he good enough to be a number two that's thrust into the side? Probably not, but there's not many that are.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why the number two goalkeepers, it's such a difficult position to buy for. Where who in their right mind is going to think to themselves, oh, I can get Alisson out of this team?
I saw someone saying, well, it was the fact it was Harry Redknapp, wasn't it? Because it was transfer deadline day, so they obviously wheeled him out. But you said like Liverpool should have gone
for Sergio. Surprised they never gave him a window.
No, honestly, Liverpool should have gone for Sergio Romero. It's like,
he's shit.
Well, he's good, but he's... why would Man United not selling Sergio Romero to Liverpool? No. Man United don't sell players to Liverpool. So that's a fucking great. That's great. So get back and get in the bin. And then you look around at what else. Like, we could have picked Joe Hart up at the start of the window. He can only dive one way.
He's terrible.
Yeah, you know. And again, Joe Hart is a perfect... I think actually Joe Hart is better than Adrian. I it sounds silly to say. He's miles better than Adrian. But he's...
I think Joe Hart 5 years ago was.
Yeah, I mean, but again, at that age, he's got charisma. He's big. He's agile. He's got international experience. He's got all the hallmarks of a good backup goalkeeper. But he also comes with loads of problems. And then you're looking around at all these other people...
Look at the first choice goalkeepers for half the Premier League. You know, Pickford made a mistake, Edison threw one at the weekend. You know, Hugo Lloris has been culpable of making mistakes. The problem, like Chris said, is the timing. You know, you just lost 7-2. You imagine ringing round clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Can I have a goalkeeper? Yeah, it's fucking £10 million more than they were worth last night. You're just going to get shafted for goalkeepers. I think the important thing
it's
is
when you're ringing them at half time. You're looking really desperate.
Are you watching the match? No, excellent. Well, on a completely unrelated matter to the match that's currently underway, we're quite in the market for your spare goalkeeper.
I think the important thing to Liverpool is to have someone who's a modern goalkeeper and fits the style that we play. Because we say the same thing about, you know, a right back or a winger. The reason Divock Origi doesn't fit our system, I think the same can be said for a goalkeeper. Adjan was in his 6 yard box. And we played a high line, so you could have a massive gaps of space. And I'm not saying that Alisson would have made a huge amount of difference, but he would have been on the edge of his box. You know, that passing back, which Robertson was forced to do. You said yesterday he did the hard bit, he controlled it, but then he can't make a 5 yard pass. Having a modern day goalkeeper who played to that style of play, it's fine for them.
It's order as well.
Yeah, but finding someone like that, like you just both said, is so hard to go and do.
You could bring any goalkeeper. You could go and spend 5 million, 10 million, £25 million on a goalkeeper. He's not Alisson Becker, Chris. So the first game, third time he pulls the gloves on for Liverpool, the opposition team are doing everything in their power to try and shit him up. And unfortunately, that's the nature of the goalkeeper position. And only takes his one slight moment, you know, where the ball just deflects in a mad way. You've spilled one and you've conceded it and you've ruined your career before things have even started. And this is, I mean, again, it comes down to it. Loris Karius is a better goalkeeper than Adrian. He's a better goalkeeper. But, like...
We still make mistakes. Yeah, also, yeah, think about like Adrian. Going back to the timing point. What are you looking at? So say let's just put it in footy manager terms because it's nice and easy to explain it, right? You're probably starting off with goalkeepers, backups, because no one with 24 hours or on the day of deadline day is selling their number one keeper to you, right? And especially when you haven't got loads of money like Liverpool at the moment. So then you're going, all right, okay, but backups, right, okay. But they're not going to sell their backup unless they've got a third keeper. So let's whittle that down to clubs with three half-decent goalkeepers. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, there's none. There's Man United and Sergio Romero. Might be it.
Got floated around really late on, and I saw Christian Walsh taking stick for this because he did a bit of the. And again, he fell into the Jay Pearson trap with the great respect, you know, with Jay. Nobody there, the Paolo Gazzaniga, and then he had to reply like, "I'm not saying no one had really heard of him. You know, most people will have heard of Paolo Gazzaniga, but most people haven't seen him play more than a handful. He had one good game against us not too long ago.
Very good game.
Yeah, yeah, and he's fine, but again." If he's third choice goalkeeper at Spurs, he's behind Joe Hart, who we've chosen not to move. That might be it could just be a homegrown thing, you know what I mean? Like, it could be the Scott Carson move for Joe Hart, you know, and that's why Spurs have gone for him, because maybe he is worse than Gazzaniga, but he affords you the option to have another foreign player in your squad or whatever. But yeah, it's like the centre back issue for me, the goalkeeper thing. If you're going to buy a goalkeeper, your backup goalkeeper is a very, it's just, you're right, Chris, it's a very difficult thing to buy for, because they've got to have a massive personality. They've got to bring something to the table when they're not playing, or they've got to be old.
I think you've got to be old and experienced, and if you're doing that, you're losing something. Because if you're a 30-odd-year-old goalkeeper and you're good, you're probably in a top team as their first choice goalkeeper. So you're either going super old right at the tail end, so you've lost agility, or they're already lacking some other attributes. Or you go the other
probably
way.
Probably not the style of keeper that you want at that age,
maybe,
as well.
Yeah, maybe that too. I mean, again, like Pepe Reina, I'm sure will have been mentioned in the past. Well, it's too late. He's gone to Lazio. Maybe we should have picked him up, but obviously someone's analysed that and gone, it's just doesn't work. Maybe he's on twice as much money as Adrian, which is another factor in that as well. So you go the other way and you're looking at kids. Well, we've got young goalkeepers. We've bought a shit ton of young goalkeepers. Maybe that's the answer. But we also know that with young goalkeepers, you lack personality, charisma and experience, which are massive intangibles about playing in that goalkeeper position. It's a shit show. It's an absolute crapshoot trying to find a backup goalkeeper. And unfortunately, sorry, Ross, with Adrian, is that he just has made a few too many mistakes. And now that Alisson's out, it feels like we'd have all just gone and bought someone because it's not our money. And it's like playing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire on a fucking quiz machine.
It's much easier than sitting in the studio, I'm sure.
Exactly. Far easier. Just go, I don't know the answer. Fuck it, it's one of them. Oh, you've just lost 50 grand. Oh, well, never mind.
Oh, nearly.
Yeah, you know, nearly. It's not
quite. It was a 1-4.
I think the only argument is, I know it's hard because of all reasons to explain, plus COVID and financial situations, is that Liverpool maybe should have recognised that earlier. You know, and the issue with Karius is he's got baggage. He's got loads of personality. He's just fucking like 7 goals in, and he's made more mistakes. And the reason that he's done that is because he doesn't have the same mentality as Alisson does. But that also, and you think you made the point yesterday of, are the defence thinking the same thing when he plays games
maybe.
Now?
Maybe. I know something you were saying as well, Chris. We're putting ourselves into that gap. We're putting our fear as fans into that. I'm not sure the Liverpool squad does feel that way because there's no way of knowing that.
Like
he's a big, exactly. Mm. But he's a big personality. He comes into the team. He does what he does. He's not great. He has his issues. If there was a big issue, I think there's one thing we've seen conclusively in how Liverpool do business. If he was a big issue, we'd have fucked him off. Because again, we've got a prime age lad who was our first choice goalkeeper who we've now sent out on loan again. Who's like, again, he's a senior lad. He played in a Champions League final. And I know he cost us the Champions League final, but he was good enough to be our goalkeeper going ahead of Simon Mignolet, by the way, you know, who many of us would have back at this point. You know, we judge Karius to be better than him, and we've judged Adrian to be a better fit for all that kind of stuff at the moment.
That's different. He's damaged goods.
No, but the point is this is, again, Alisson. You're not banking on Alisson to be out. Yeah. And we go, well, he was out last season. Yeah, but he's just got a shoulder injury. He's just took a beating in training. And you can go, well, that could happen any week. It could, but that could happen to any one of your players. Doesn't mean you go out and buy another £75 million centre-half in case Virgil van Dijk gets injured.
Be nice, though.
It would be. Exactly, but that's the answer, isn't it? That is the solution. The solution is to have 2 world-class goalkeepers and 4 world-class centre-halves and 6 world-class forwards and all that. It's not possible. So you'd have to make your peace and you have to trust that your world-class players are available more often than they're not. And unfortunately, because Alisson's out, we go, but he missed loads of games last season. It was completely unrelated. He picked up a calf injury by miskicking a ball in the first game because he'd not had a pre-season and he would play too much footy and he was worn down. Him getting clattered in training is not the same. Unless it happens again and again and again, he becomes Chris Kirkland, and then we all have to just fucking lose our heads. Just very quickly then, because I think we filled the time quite nicely, to be honest. City drew with Leeds, which was great. Leicester got...
I had Leeds to win that. I had a 10 really? On Leeds to win at 8-1.
They should have done as well.
Oh. Leicester got absolutely dicked by West Ham, which is... that's the result for me, Chris, that it almost informed the fears. And I remember saying this going into the Villa game in the build-up to it. That was the result that should have had Liverpool on high alert because West Ham are fucking shite and they play in claret and blue and Leicester are quite good. And if West Ham can beat Leicester, West Ham should be, you know, the wheels are falling off, their fans up in arms, the club are terribly run.
That club's in turmoil at the moment. Like, I mean, they've sold the best talent for like 80 million. They were on a buy to sell, weren't they? They've sold fucking 9 players. I saw Nicky tweeting about last night, and they brought in 1 player. I mean, it's terrible, absolutely terrible. And they literally snotted Leicester everywhere.
And this is Leicester, who
Just beat Man City.
Hunted Man City everywhere the week.
So West Ham are now better than City?
Absolutely. West Ham are the best team in the league now, apart from Everton, obviously. I mean, again, this is the point about it, kind of going back to the point at the top, Ross, is footy's mad. So I think sometimes we do get a little bit kind of, we have a blinkered view of footy sometimes. We do a bit myopic because we're so focused on Liverpool. Sometimes it's good to like kind of let the blinkers off, a little wider look at the league and go, it's all well, good and fun laughing at Manchester City and laughing at Manchester United. And we should do because we've got to enjoy our rivals losing when we can.
But make sure you've got your fucking belt on so you don't get pants yourself.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like, you know what I mean?
That, you know, but you've got to be aware of that. Us, whether we laugh at rival fans or not, accept that it's very likely that you're going to have it sent back at you, so be prepared for that and don't get upset when it comes back on you. But also, again, just this notion that, look, footy is a bit crazy. So Liverpool are not we're never going to win 38 games back-to-back this season.
It's a shame.
I think that softens the blow for a lot of fans, and probably that's partly why you saw the reaction that we did on Sunday. Yeah. You know, alone in that day was the Leicester-West Ham Man United game. And he go back to do the ones.
If we'd been the only team,
yeah, then
I think it adds to that. But the context of the weekend's action, definitely.
Yeah. I don't know, even the ones leading to that, you know, the 4-3 against Leeds, you know, I think there's a couple more.
Looking like a good result now, City do with them.
Yeah, so you know, anything can happen. Like we said before, you know, I don't know when to expect things to calm down. Like there's an app. I won't mention who it is, but you've basically got to guess 6 correct scores, and then you win like $1 million. Like. Good luck with that. Like, no, what's the fucking one? It's 7-3 for every game.
I remember doing the pools years ago. Like, and I hadn't done it. And I'm putting an acher on for the first time and being like, this is dead easy because these are obviously going to win. Oh, like, yeah. I've just put Liverpool, United, City. You know, Arsenal home to Brighton. Well, there's a dead. Yeah, that's fine. Like, they get a 5 or 6 team acher, laughing. I'll be making hundreds every week off this. This just seems like easy money. Oh,
I'm in a last man stands. Have you played a last man stands with anyone? I'm in a last man stands. We're already on our second game of it. We're 4 games into the season. By 3, 20 people had gone out. Yeah. And we only have to pick one team to win one game at the weekend. Fucking right? Up. Basically, I think I went out on, I can't remember which one it was, United. I went out on United. I mean, just ridiculous. All you have to do is pick one team to win a game of football at the weekend, and 20 of us couldn't get through 3 fucking weeks, and it rolled over. And now we're on our second one, and there's already about a quarter of the people gone because loads of people picked Liverpool against Aston Villa, and you're only picking one fucking side.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantasy football's going to be the same, isn't it? Yeah. What's the fucking point?
Yeah, madness. Absolute madness all along. I think you're top of our draft league at the moment, aren't you?
Yeah,
let's hope it continues the madness.
Mic drop!
Yeah. Thanks everyone who sent the comments in on all of this. Everton are top of the league. It's mad. That's another thing as well. It's 2 weeks of shit-eating grins of Evertonians. Like, I'd forgotten, because I said this, two of my 3 brother-in-laws are Villa fans, the other one's an Arsenal fan, and I'd forgotten about my father-in-law is an Evertonian when he dropped the kids off and made some, like, he can't help himself with shit puns, but he was like, something about the kid, we went past yours 7 times, and I was like, I don't understand, and he just had to go, 7, I was like, you lost 7-2, huh? And I'm like, all right, Sad, yeah, okay, Sad, I get what you're getting at. Like, we got swatted by Everton and you're top of the league. It was, did you see the video of the little kids with on outside Anfield and someone put like, get Richarlison wears the number 7, get him the new kit, you scruff someone. I mean, like, we conceded 7. Richarlison, there was something in there that would have been perfect.
Because Richarlison do a cryptic tweet or something like that, did he? God,
yeah, but the little kid gets out of the car and shouts blue or white shite, but he's got, I think he's number 30, the old one.
Yeah, we've got all that. We've got a couple of weeks of that until the derby. Let's hope we put them in the place.
What a game to go back to, though, after a 7-2 defeat. Fucking miss it. Oh, well, arguably, you know, on form, underdogs.
Yeah.
Fucking mental.
Oh, you're going into the game. Like that. Underdogs. That's amazing.
They'll have a week of a loving life, and then they're going to have a week of, oh, we're the favourites for the game. We're the favourites for the game. We can't lose to them. Yeah. They're behind us. If we win, oh my God, we're going to go 15 points. They're going to shit the bed.
That's where it'll benefit us, them not having people in the stands.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. But then they're loving life without fans ruining their hopes and ambitions.
To be fair, they look like a really good football team at the moment.
Yeah. Craig Adams dropped in a $5 super chat. Thank you so much for that. And another one. He said, lads, top chat and channel, watching from Australia. I, for one, am excited to see how we react to that humiliation. I hope the boys come back angry. I completely agree on that. And Paul Tregoning says, short-term memory when emotions are involved. After Alisson got injured in game one last season, Adjan helped us to win the next eight games. It's a team sport and the entire team didn't turn up. It is what it is. Is the thing about the Adjan thing, no amount of us thinking Adjan's not good enough or being annoyed that Adjan's in goal or being angry with Adjan or whatever has any impact on how Liverpool play. It's only just it's the fear of knowing in inverted commas that he's going to fuck up and like living the disaster that hasn't happened and may not happen. It's no way to live.
Thankfully, he can't hear us or go every time he gets the ball through the televisions. You know what I mean? Yeah, if we were in the ground, that might have a much bigger impact than if we're at home.
Completely agree on that. It's the Everton world they're living in now. They haven't got their own fans breathing down their necks.
To be fair, the defenders are literally going every time he comes out for the fucking ball. Like.
Yeah, definitely. Right, listen, thank you so much. If you've watched us live, then that's amazing. Do drop a like on the video here on YouTube. If you listen to us on podcast apps after the fact, then leave us a 5-star review. There's some incredible Red Men merch doing the rounds right now. If you're on YouTube, you can have a look underneath. I don't know what the size got the advert queued up, but if you... What? Yes! Here's a little advert that shows you some of the amazing stuff. Go and click through, check out the website, and have a look at the stuff like the Tiago t-shirt that is brand new on there as well.
It's a doozy.
It's a doozy. See you all soon. Ta-da.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.